The Catholics of Oz is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
You're listening to episode 10 of The Catholics of Oz. The Catholics of Oz is a show where we discuss faith, culture, and what's been happening from an Aussie perspective. Whether it's synods or science, apostolates and apps, providence or productivity, you can hear it right now on The Catholics of Oz. Hello, I'm Lindsay San, and welcome to episode 10 of The Catholics of Oz. Joining me today is my sister, Caroline Knight. Caroline, how are you?
I'm good. We made it to episode 10. Yay.
Yeah, we're in double figures. Yeah, I feel like we've crossed, we've grown up a little bit, crossed a line. Yeah, so it's great. So anyone who is listening to the podcast for the first time, you've got 10 episodes that you can now binge listen to. So
Go for it.
Netflix status, which is really good. Yeah, so now we have to mention that our co-host Jerry is not able to join us today. And that's kind of our fault because we were meant to record a week ago, but you and I are both a bit ill. So that's a welcome
to... Well, I'm still ill, but we're still doing it anyway.
Welcome winter to is not my winters friend. Winters in Australia. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So also, obviously, to our audience, when you listen to this podcast, it's going to be a week or two later than normal. So that's our excuse. Hope you accept that. And while I've got you, dear audience, please remember that you can subscribe to the Catholics of Pod. That's two words I was putting together at the same time. So I'll try that again. You can subscribe to the Catholics of Oz on Stitcher, TuneIn, and your favorite podcast apps. We're also on YouTube, so you can just hit the bell on YouTube to get notifications. We also like feedback on our episodes, so you can leave feedback on iTunes and other podcast directories. And every time you share our podcast and leave feedback, you help us to grow our communities and reach more people. So Caroline, should we dive into our topics today?
Let's go for it.
Great. So let's start with Faith Beyond Borders.
Well, I'm actually feeling rather good about this. I think we've all arrived at a very special place, eh? Spiritually, ecumenically.
How do you make somebody love you without affecting free will?
Welcome to my world, son. You come up with an answer to that one, you let me know.
Yes, I had to work very hard to pass Latin and theology.
Quite. Those are, of course, the most important things.
Oh, yeah.
So, being episode 10, let's do a special Faith Beyond Borders. Today, it's not what people normally expect because we generally tend to talk about people who do good things for our faith discussion and sometimes people who maybe don't evangelize in a way that could be considered constructive. But today, Caroline, I'd like to start by talking about Grumpy Cat. How does that sound?
Sounds perfect.
All right, so let's do this. Now, the reason why I'm talking about this is because, sadly, Grumpy Cat, the beautiful cat who gave us, well, I don't know if beautiful is the right word to choose, but beautiful in other ways.
He's a cat.
Yeah, he's a cat, yeah. Who gave us so many wonderful memes and shot to fame recently passed away on the 14th of May, which was kind of a sad thing to hear. So I wanted to start very quickly with Grumpy Cat's obituary, which is on, what is the... social network. It's on Instagram. So I'll just read this quickly. We are unimaginably heartbroken to announce the loss of our beloved Grumpy Cat. Despite care from top professionals as well as her very loving family, Grumpy encountered complications from a recent urinary tract infection that unfortunately became too tough for her to overcome. She passed away peacefully on the morning of Tuesday, May 14th at the home in the arms of her mummy Tabitha. Besides being our baby and a cherished member of the family, Grumpy Cat has helped millions of people smile all around the world, even when times were tough. Her spirit will continue to live on through her fans everywhere. Grumpy's family, Tabitha, Brian, and Crystal. So that's quite a touching note for a cat that's made us all laugh around the world.
Yeah.
And just a few fun facts very quickly. Grumpy Cat obviously shot to fame because of the memes that started with, you know, with the facial expressions that she made. Her online celebrity rose quickly, and it says here that she translated into a real world empire with a Christmas movie, which I had no idea that actually existed.
Oh, I didn't know about that. No,
didn't know that. And she was voiced by comedian Aubrey Plaza, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of TV appearances. So in Australia, we had, was it the morning show on Channel 9? Do you remember Carl Stefanovic?
Oh, yes.
he asked, or it just involved him asking Grumpy Cat questions. Of course, the cat said nothing, and Carl was
very grumpy.
Losing it. So, yeah, that's right. But lots of TV appearances, soft toy merchandise, clothing, and even February, there was an original fragrance. I'm not sure if a cat fragrance is something I'd be wanting to buy.
I want a cat fragrance. Yeah. I have four cats and I don't want cat fragrance.
It's not that fragrant, yeah. Her owners had also countered claims of exploitation, saying that the Grumpy Cat website, that 99% of the time she's just a normal cat, and that for the safety of our family and that of Grumpy Cat, she doesn't do personal meetings. Last year, they actually won a $750,000 damages suit from a US coffee company for violating the terms of their agreement to use Grumpy Cat's image on a line of iced coffee drinks called Grumpuccinos. The reason why I think this is interesting is because Grumpy Cat actually made a brief appearance at the trial. Oh. So there you go. Now, why are we doing
she
this?
She had a big input.
Yeah, yeah. And why are we talking about Grumpy Cat? Well, the reason is because when our pets pass away, it's a sad time. And the question has come up a couple of times, do pets go to heaven? And, you know, like we all try to explain to our kids about, you know, pets and, you know, they'll say, you know, will I see them in heaven and things like that? And you have to delicately talk about the subject. Mm. We don't want to get it theologically wrong, but we also want to look after our kids' feelings as well, don't we?
Yeah.
And Caroline, so in my household, we actually don't have any pets, but I grew up, you know, with you, with cats, yeah. Dogs, there was a duck at one stage, lots of fish everywhere. Yeah. But you've certainly continued the sand tradition. Why don't you tell us about your pet situation?
Oh, well, yes. My name is Caroline and I'm a cataholic. So I have four cats and I justify it by there's four humans in our family, so we kind of have to have one each for cuddling, okay? So
that's fair. That's fair.
Yes. I have Sylvester, who is my old boy. He's a black and white cat, and I got him when I was 21. Dad actually brought him home for me as a surprise. He was a stray kitten, and he is now turning 18 years old this year. Yeah, he's doing very well, thank goodness. So, yeah,
I can't believe he's 18.
I know. Well, you know, you were still in the house when Sylvester came along, so you know Sylvester quite well.
Yep, and he's always been a grumpy cat.
He has, but in a loving way.
In a loving way, yeah.
he's just a grumpy boy cat, but, you know, he's still very affectionate. Then next comes along is Snuffy, who is a blue Burmese.
Mm-hmm.
Gray, but they call her blue. And I got Snuffy not long after Phil and I got married because we thought Sylvester needed a friend, and they actually get along really well. And she is 10 years old. And then we did have a chocolate Burmese topping, but she passed. Yes, Phil named her topping because she's chocolate, okay? she passed away a couple of years ago, poor thing. She was sick most of her life and she lived to 7 years, which we were grateful to have her for all those 7 years. And actually the kids still miss her and ask a lot about her. And, you know, now that we're talking about it, I've had to tell them, you know, yeah, she goes to cat heaven. And, yeah, I'm not really sure what to tell them, but they're so young and I don't want them to get so upset because they cry when they talk about her and they still
of
miss
course.
Her. You know, and I miss her very much too. And so we always have her in our heart. Not to replace Popping as much, but just because we loved having a third cat, we got Melita, and she's 2 years old now and she's a very big girl. I had no idea how big she was going to grow, but she's a beautiful girl. And then I couldn't help it, okay, and my husband encouraged me. We have a new addition to the family, and I promise it's going to stop here.
sure.
I hope. So we have a new kitten, and the kids had an input in naming him. He is a Siamese cross ragdoll. He's absolutely adorable, and his name is Chocolate Rocket Chips.
When you let kids name the pets.
That's right. I wanted to call him Rocket. Frankie's like, oh, no, Harry's like, I want to call him Chocolate. And Frankie was looking at some chips I was making that night. He's like, no, Chips. And they were like, okay, Chocolate Rocket Chips. We call him all three names. So
poor cat.
Yeah. He doesn't care. He's happy. He's on my lap right now.
And you can visit Caroline's cat farm at
$5 per family. Yeah.
Like, see the elephant? $5. Yeah. Simpsons reference.
Stampy, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So where are we going with this?
Yeah. So I've got quite a big cat family. Yeah,
you do. Yeah. So the point with this is that you and Jared showed me an article that was in a Catholic publication. I forgot which one it was.
I can't remember which one, but yeah.
Yeah. But they made the point that that when pets die, they go to heaven. The heaven, you know, that we understand from the Gospels and so on. So I was scratching my head and I thought, you know, because I automatically assumed that Catholics just know that pets don't go to heaven. But there's actually a lot of thought about this that's gone into this. And it's interesting that there's divided opinions amongst Catholics about what will actually happen to pets when they die. So I just thought I might share some of the historical thoughts of what people had. And then go to a source which I think is really helpful on settling the question. And then we can have our listeners come in and then tell us what they think too. Mm. So basically in the article, it was talking about how there were different popes who said definitely animals, you know, don't go to heaven. And then as people do, they looked at some of the writings of Pope Francis and they said, look, Pope Francis says pets are going to heaven. Here it is, like definitive proof. And in fact, and I'll get to the quote from where that's from in a moment, but in fact, if you search for do pets go to heaven or Pope Francis do pets go to heaven, you find all these websites that say, look, thank God Pope Francis said pets go to heaven. You know, people saying, I kind of think that pets do go to heaven. So it's a, that makes sense to me, things like that. You know, how could God not let pets go to heaven? So the source of this was Pope Francis's encyclical, Laudato Si. So remember that one? It was actually, people say it's on the environment. So it is, but it's also on a lot of other things as well. But they picked up the environmental thing. And so Pope Francis had some really good things to say about animals and our treatment of animals. And I think it is important. I've always said as well that the way we treat animals reflects the kinds of people that we are. So cruelty to especially to domesticated pets, I think is morally wrong. So, you know, I don't think, yeah, I mean, because what are you getting out of it? What does it say about you as a person? Now, I know there's also debates about being vegetarian and vegan and so on, but clearly, at least from our point of view, there is a morally good reason for why we slaughter animals for food as well. And there are, there are ethical ways to kill animals so that we can eat them and things like that. So we're not getting into that today. But there is something
that's a good topic.
we'll open that can of worms in another podcast maybe.
Yeah.
But there is a case to make that things like, for example, biodiversity is really important. So when we damage the biodiversity of the planet, which includes the killing of, animals, unfairly and recklessly and things like that by destroying their habitats, that's clearly a bad thing. And if we are cruel to, sometimes there are stories about cruel things that people have done to animals and, it's, something that makes us squeamish because it's quite awful to see that. So,
I can't even read them.
Yeah, because we're open to the idea that suffering is, we understand the redemptive value of suffering, but to see something or someone suffer is not pleasant or nice. So where are people getting this thing about Pope Francis? So this is the quote from Laudato Si that I've seen people sort of using to justify that pets go to heaven. He said, eternal life will be a shared experience of awe in which each creature resplendently transfigured will take its rightful place and have something to give those poor men and women who will have been liberated once and for all. So that's what they've taken. And here it is. It's the shared experience of awe in which each creature will be resplendently transfigured. So people have taken the each creature and they've said, there we are. So he's talking about every creature that's been created. So spiders, pets, you know, whatever else.
Leeches.
Leeches. See, there's already a downside. Someone called the idea of pets going to heaven Fido heresy, I think it was. Fido heresies. Or we would say Rover heresies here in Australia, because I think Rover is the common, the cliched dog name.
Yeah.
Or Rufus, or names like that. Yeah. So I might just give a couple of thoughts on this. And then Caroline, chime in if you with anything else that you think as well.
Sure.
So from a theological point of view, and again, I'm happy for people to correct me on this, but the word creature, it says something differently to me than it does to people who think about creatures like bugs and dogs and cats and so on. So I think, for example, of the idea of the fear of God. So the idea, for example, in the Old Testament that we see this phrase, and we see it, I think we see it in the New Testament as well, but especially the Old Testament, it talks about fearing God. And that's a phrase that gets misconstrued as well to being afraid of God, which is clearly not a good understanding of that phrase. But in the understanding of the fear of God, I get the word creature as well, because in a theological sense, the idea of the fear of God is about the relationship between the creature and the creator. So the person who created everything on earth. And in this case, the creature is the product of the creator, and the creatures are us, human beings, if that makes sense.
I like so, that, yes.
Yeah. So that's where the word creature, that's actually how I would interpret when I'm reading this encyclical, when I see the word creature, just from a theological sense. So and then what happens is, just to finish off that side note, fear doesn't necessarily mean about being afraid of God, but fear means that in this sense that we understand our place in that relationship, that God clearly is greater because God is, you know, infinite being, et cetera, and we're the creation, we're the creatures of this infinite being. And that's how we, and then when we understand that relationship, our position, our who we are as people starts to make sense. If we deviate from that and say I'm greater than God, then who we are and our identity doesn't make sense anymore, because what we believe is a lie. So getting to pets, then I was doing a bit of a search. All right, so then if we know that creatures are human beings, what about pets? So I was trying to look for somewhere Catholic that might have the answers. And when you put Catholic and Answers together, you come across this wonderful ministry called Catholic Answers, and they actually have a little article. Yeah. Yeah, funny that, by Carlo Broussard. It was written in 2017, and we'll put this in our show notes as well. And he answers the question of, do pets go to heaven? So I won't read every single thing, but I'll just summarize quickly. So he starts with the Catechism, which, by the way, the Catechism is a good place to start when we have questions like this. And he talks about paragraph 124, and it says that heaven is the state of supreme and definitive happiness. It involves the perfect communion of life and love with the Trinity, with the Virgin Mary, the angels, and all the blessed. So what we understand is that human beings, when we die and when we go to heaven, that we experience the supreme happiness that God has intended for us, and we do it in God's presence, in close proximity to God, and with those who have gone before us. So if we think of Mary, we think of all the saints, we think of people we love who, hopefully they're all in heaven. That's, that's God's thing to work out. But that's what we're talking about here. However, pets can't experience the beatific vision as we can. So do animals have souls? Yes, they do, because we understand that the soul is what animates the body. But human souls and pet souls, creature souls, are different things altogether. So God created human beings specially, different from the rest of creation, for a special purpose and a special reason. Whereas the pets, our pets, insects, trees, everything else, these are all the beautiful things he created that we live amongst. And they're beautiful things that help us to appreciate who God is. But they don't have souls in the sense that that can be saved, right? And talking about how souls are saved, the idea is, we understand the resurrection. So we've just celebrated Easter recently, and Easter is all about the resurrection of Jesus and the resurrection we'll experience. So the way this works is, in Catholic teaching, there's actually two judgments of the soul. So when we die, we experience the judgment, the immediate judgment of, heaven or hell. Okay, depending, did we choose hell by our life choices, or did we Do we try to live the best lives that we possibly could in the context of God and then be saved? So in that sense, our soul goes to heaven, but that's not the resurrection. The resurrection isn't actually until the end of time. So when we talk about Christ returning, so if you think of the book of Revelation and how it symbolically talks about Christ coming back and saying, you know, see, I make all things new. This is the new creation. So what this article basically says to settle the question is our pets won't go to heaven. However, in the creation of a new heaven and a new earth at the end of time, it's possible that animals could exist in this new heaven and this new earth. So not animals being saved. You know, animals can't experience the resurrection. You know, Jesus didn't die for animals. I know people might not be happy to hear that, but Jesus died to save us. I might also point to, just to finish this off, the book of Genesis. And if we look at the first of the two creation stories in chapter one, it's a beautifully written epic, like a piece of poetry. And you know how it says on the first day, God created this, and the second day, and so on. That symbolic, and I stress symbolic order of creation, has human beings on the sixth day, on the last day. And what the ancient authors who wrote this story were trying to say is that human beings are at the top of the order of creation, if that makes sense. And then immediately above them is God. So that's why we have this discussion of keeping and tilling the earth in the second creation story. The idea is that we are stewards of creation. So animals, nature, trees, and so on, we have a responsibility to cultivate it sustainably and to keep it beautiful as God made it beautiful for us. So sadly, our pets don't join us in heaven. We have to appreciate them while we have them.
Oh, so just wait for the new heaven. And
yeah,
the new
so
earth.
Yeah. So when you get to the new heaven and new earth, I'm sure you can find four more cats to get going.
No, I want my cats anyway.
Yeah.
So did you have any new ones?
Did you have any thoughts to add to that, Caroline?
I do. I have a few thoughts.
Go on.
So first of all, I guess that I would like to think that I want to go to heaven to make sure that if my cats are there, I'm there to see them. So, like, I think we really need to concentrate on getting ourselves to heaven before we can think about do animals get there.
Good point.
Yeah. So I'm doing my very best to do that. But I have a feeling that my cats sin a lot less than me. I mean, you know, cats. Animals in general act, you know, with their innate behavior. So, you know, why does a lion kill? It's hungry. So, you know, all it's doing is killing to eat. It's not killing out of murder like a human could do, you know. So, you know, and the other thing is that I forgot what I was going to say. Yeah, so I think, you know, humans are very emotional. We get attached. We can get attached to things, our car, our house, and our cats. I mean, like, I love my pets so much, and of course I wish that I will meet them, you know, when and if I make it to heaven. Like I said, I'm hoping to make it there and do my very best. But, you know, so, you know, we do get attached, and maybe people do lose sight of reality. Like you were saying, heaven is created for people, and Jesus died to save humans, and we are creatures of the Creator. So, you know, animals were made just like the earth was made for us and our benefit and our enjoyment here on earth. So as much as I would love to say, yeah, I believe pets go to heaven, I'm not sure, but I will tell my children that just to comfort them, you know, at this age, you know, they're quite young. I don't want them to be distressed, you know. I mean, I guess there's a bit of a line, like, do I tell them no, they don't go to heaven? It's a bit like Santa Claus, does he exist? We all tell the kids Santa exists, you know,
yeah,
even if he doesn't, or the Easter Bunny or whatever. So I guess, you know, thinking about it in that way, you know, I mean, I'm not going to pretend to tell God what he does. You know, it's up to him whether he wants animals in heaven or not. So basically, I leave it to him. But like I said, in the first place, I just want to make sure that I get there and my family get there and, you know, all my loved ones get there. So, yeah. But hopefully, yeah. Sylvester and Topping and Snuffy and Chocolate Rocket Chips and Melita will be there with me and my past doggy. I had a doggy in the past too. And
yeah.
I wish she'd be there too.
Beautiful dog, yeah.
Yeah, she was so nice. And like, yeah, like in the case of dogs, most of them, unless they've been treated very badly, they've just got such a nice nature. And you think, why wouldn't they go to heaven? They're just so loving and they never do anything wrong, you know?
Well, according to the classic children's cartoon, All Dogs Go to Heaven, I mean, I'm sure, yeah, I'm not sure how true that is. But I'd probably just put a footnote on our discussion by saying, firstly, I think a good way for us to think about all of creation is that creation points out the glory of God, including our pets, including everything that we see. It points out how good God is, I think. And the other thing is I think to remember that, you know, so that heaven is this gift for us and we can be grateful that God does love us enough to have done this for us. So should we move on now, Caroline?
First of all, how about a few grumpy cat memes just to celebrate his life?
Okay, so tell me about a grumpy cat meme that you remember.
Okay, so I've got a few here that I could just read them for the whole hour. But
go for it.
So, like, there's one like, okay, so he's kind of like running on the ground away from like a lake or something. He's going, yuck, I stepped in some happiness. Or there's another one. So many reasons to be grumpy, so little time. I have a dream that one day you'll shut up.
Oh, wow. They're so harsh, aren't they?
Yeah. I know. Oh, yeah. Like, there's one just him with a grumpy face going, I had fun once. So, yeah, I could just keep going. There are so many.
Yeah, yeah. There were two that stood, actually, there's three that stood out for me. The first one was the one that said, I read a text that said PLZ because it was shorter than please. Uh-huh. So I replied no because it's shorter than yes. There's that one. Another one that stood out to me was it was from some Bruno Mars lyrics and the top said something like Bruno Mars says, I would catch a grenade for you. And then Grumpy Cat at the bottom says, yeah, I'd be the one throwing it. So, yeah, it's quite nasty. And of course, because Grumpy Cat died recently, there's one of Grumpy Cat in heaven. The cats, you know, cats go to heaven. Here we go, and Grumpy Cat says, "Oh, so this is heaven? I hate it."
Quite so cheeky. He doesn't go to heaven.
yeah. So very cheeky. Yeah.
All right, wait, one more. Ready?
Yeah, go for it. Yep.
You look happy. Stop it. Like we can relate to these kind of sarcastic things sometimes, can't we?
Yeah. It's good just to have a laugh at these things, I think.
Yeah.
So if any of you who are listening have any wonderful Grumpy Cat memes, why don't you post them on the Catholics of Oz Facebook page? We'd love to see those. But let's move on now. And I'd like to move on to a topic for today in something personal.
I bet you don't know anything about me.
You were born in Phoenix. You went to school in Tempe. You're an only child. Your favorite show is something called The Real Housewives of Atlanta. And your favorite book is Kendall Jenner's Instagram feed.
How did you know all that?
So, Caroline, this one's a bit of a story for me. So every now and then we like to tell stories about things that are going on in our lives and things that are important that we've experienced. Our last one, I think, Caroline, was talking about our Lenten and Easter experiences. I think you, Jerry, and I were sharing some of our stories from that. Yeah. So today I wanted to share a short story about a camp that I went with my school. I'm a high school teacher, so you know, obviously part of my role as the head of religious education is when we have religiously themed camps, I'm part of that that organizing of it and then going along to it as well. So 2 weeks ago, we ran a city-based retreat and we've been doing this one for 3 years. And this is a retreat where we actually ask students to volunteer to come along and we do a retreat on the problem of homelessness in the city. So we go to Melbourne. And we sleep in the CBD at a Christian retreat center that they have there on Collins Street. And we do 3 days of workshops, walks to see how people experience homelessness and to learn more about what homelessness is. And then to use our Catholic social teaching in order to find ways to try and do something about it to alleviate the problem of homelessness. So on the 3 days, we took 26 students this time that they had volunteered. They were year 10 and year 11 students. And we took them to workshops from two external agencies. One was a Baptist church agency called The Intersection, obviously meeting people, you know, that they have a ministry of meeting people on the streets and trying to provide help to them. It was the one organization that ran two workshops. And the other one was sort of a talk about how Christianity and empathy, you know, work together. So the idea of, you know, understanding your fellow person and trying to do something about it, not just to feel sorry for them, but to do more about it. But also about sometimes about the harsh judgments that people can make about homeless people. So just assuming, you know, that they can lift themselves out of poverty if they really tried and things like that. So one of the key experiences we had was we walked. Have you heard of the Golden Mile in Melbourne at all?
I've heard of it.
Yeah, I wasn't too familiar with it, except what it is it's basically the length of Collins Street, and they have what's called the Paris end of Collins Street, and it's kind of the place where a lot of the wealthier kind of shopping experiences are. So
yeah.
you'd need to be willing, for example, Mont Blanc, which is a store where they sell pens. You need to be willing to spend a minimum of $5,000 to buy a fountain pen there.
Yeah, we've driven through and there's a lot of designer stores, which I'd never be able to even, I can't even look at them because it costs me so expensive.
You can feel the money just falling out of your wallet as you drive past. Yeah,
totally.
Yeah, but the Golden Mile is basically, it's the walk of Collins Street, and there are these little sort of golden spots on the footpath. I didn't realize this until they showed us, they've got it, told us to look down. And there's just these, you know, sort of 1 meter apart golden dots on the ground. And basically it's like a touristy thing where you walk along the Golden Mile and you see the richness, you know, so you see Mont Blanc and you see all the clothing stores and so on. And it's a very sought after address to have a business on Collins Street because it actually raises the value of your business and the building that you've built on that street as well by, you know, thousands, or well, I should say tens or hundreds of thousands. So for example, I didn't know this, but I forgot which church it was, but there's a church of a denomination that I can't remember, and it's got a property, and there's a Westpac building behind it on Russell Street. And so Westpac approached this church years and years ago, and they organized a 99-year lease where Westpac leased enough lands to have a sort of a 2 meter wide footpath that went from the back of their building through the church property and onto Collins Street. So Westpac now has, even though they're actually on the corner of Russell Street and Lonsdale Street, they actually have a Collins Street address, which raised the value of their profile and, you know, and their property and things like that as well. So yeah. And that's, I think it was the Herald Sun or another newspaper years ago that actually had a news story about this 99-year lease where they won't say, how much it's worth or anything. So I guess the church benefits from, that's right, So that actually is a thing. So in terms of homelessness in the city of Melbourne itself, so within Victoria, they estimate, and this number can change very quickly, but they estimate at the moment there are approximately 47,000 people that experience a type of homelessness. So, this homelessness can, for example, be because of domestic violence. And this is men and women who experience domestic violence and then don't have a place to live. So they end up in emergency housing or things like that. Amongst younger people, we have the phenomenon of couch surfing. And the whole idea of this is young people whose family situations might not be very good and they can't live at home. So they go and live at a friend's house. So they sleep on the couch. You know, they go and live at someone that they know. So the phrase they use is couch surfing. And then, of course, we have this primary poverty where people live actually on the streets of the city or in other parts of Victoria as well. So within Melbourne, there are approximately, or around Victoria, there are approximately 7,000 people that live on the streets of Victoria. So they don't have a place to live. And so the reason why most people flock to the city of Melbourne is because it's relatively safer because there's more lighting. You know, there are more places, there are more open spaces that are covered. And places where they can sleep at night or whatever else. So as we walked through the streets, it didn't take long. We actually caught the train. There's a train station about 10-minute walk from our school. And then we went straight into the city. As soon as we got off Southern Cross Station, we just had to walk around the corner, and there were already people, you know, who experienced homelessness that were there on the streets. You know, so they had their blankets, you know, the cardboard, you know, things to cover everything, you know, their backpacks and bags, you know, sleeping bags,
and
the whole lot.
It's winter now too.
And it's, yeah, we're getting to the coldest part of the year. So, so our students were exposed to that very quickly. As we just as we walked to our accommodation in the city, which is about a 15-minute walk from the train station. And so basically our students were wonderful, because what happened was every day they were given a packed lunch by the retreat center that we went to. And the retreat center would always make extra food just in case there were some students that wanted to eat more than others and they could pack a little bit more. So the students would take the extra food and then they would go and approach homeless people. We didn't tell them to do this, by the way, but they would go and approach homeless people and talk to them and give them something to eat as well.
That's so nice.
Yeah, so it was good of them. So what we said to the students was, look, use your brains and just be careful, right? If you don't approach someone that you're not sure about, and just make sure that we know about it. And so they were already showing this empathy by going to speak to people who are homeless there on the streets. There's also an app that the Intersection group created where you basically can, it's got the stories of about six people who experience homelessness on the streets of Melbourne, and you can listen to it, and then it tells you to walk from one street to another. So, you know, it's like walk here, and where it gets you to walk to is, you know, Melbourne's famous for, you know, its alleyways, you know, and it's, you know, like its alleyway cafes and things like that.
Yep.
You know, and also it's graffiti, you know, it's alleyways with graffiti. A lot of those are actually tourist destinations
they
too.
Are.
Like, yeah, people, yes. Like even when we were there were tourists taking photos, but these are places where people sleep at night too.
Mm.
So basically the app would tell them, you know, go here. And then when they get there, they would listen to the story of this person, and then they'd say, go here. And this person would talk about it. Yeah. And now the thing is, some people who are homeless actually know that when people will take this route, that they're actually listening to the app and learning about homelessness. And so they approach people who are using it, and they say, thank you for hearing these stories. And, you know,
how
and
lovely.
Yeah. So there are some good things that come out of it. They build connection. And so I guess the most important thing that we managed to do was humanize homeless people rather than them being this, you know, all the cliches of, oh, they use drugs, they drink, they're this, they're that, it's their own fault, they're homeless, you know, all the prejudices that are there. And so now our students are thinking of ways to, I guess, to do something about it, which is good to see. I wanted to put a footnote on this story as well. Being a Catholic retreat, we took them to Mass at St. Francis Church on Lonsdale Street. You know, the famous one with the Catholic bookshop that we always go to and spend money.
Oh, yes, I know that
always,
one, yes.
You know, hundreds of dollars. I think we're keeping that shop open, actually, with
probably.
The money we spend
just
there.
Us,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. Yeah, just us, yeah. But yeah. We've made it a thing to go to Mass there. Now, this church is famous because I think it was one of the first churches that was built in Melbourne, so historically. Mm. So it was kind of considered the Cathedral of Melbourne until St. Pat's Cathedral was built. And some other fun facts, it's the place where Ned Kelly's parents were married.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And it's
so
also
Ned
where-
Ned Kelly,
yeah,
briefly,
yeah.
was a famous bushranger,
Bush Ranger,
we call him.
Yes.
Like a criminal in the colonial days.
Yes.
I guess. And he was from Ireland, and he ended up, he had a gang, didn't he? The Ned Kelly gang.
Ned Kelly gang,
yeah. They used to rob people and things like that until they were caught. But yes.
And famous for his suit of armor that he, you know, the metal helmet and metal clothing
that
he wore as well. So famous
that's
for,
right.
I think, one of the reasons that made him famous.
Also, he didn't have any covering on his legs, and they shot his legs, and that's how
that
he
was
captured.
Made his demise eventually, yes.
That's right.
Yes, and was hanged, and his last words were, such is life, and that's like most Australians know that as his famous quote,
yes,
such is life.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And also another fun fact, our first Australian saint, Mary MacKillop, received most of her sacraments there as well.
Oh, I didn't know that either. There you go.
So some fun facts. But anyway, we took the students to Mass there, and what we do is every year we go before the Mass, we just go into the sacristy and we tell the priest, look, we've got some students from our school, you know, so just so you know. And so what the priests normally do is they acknowledge our students. And then this particular priest, we've had him three times. And if he knows we're there, he will preach directly to our students as well, which is fantastic because
he
brings them in. Yeah. So this particular reading was fantastic because it was, I'll just bring it up quickly. It was the Gospel of John. and it was John chapter 14, verses 1 to 7. And there are some really beautiful things about this that he tied into homelessness. So if you don't mind, I'm just going to read this very quickly and then talk about one or two things he said and wrap up this segment. So it goes like this. It says, "Do not let your hearts be troubled. This is Jesus talking. Believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house, there are many dwelling places. If it were not so, would I have told you that I go to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and take you to myself, so that where I am, there you may be also. And you know the way to the place where I am going." Thomas said to him, "Lord, we do not know where you are going. How can we know the way?" Jesus said to him, "I am the way, and the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. If you know me, you will know my Father also. From now on, you do know him and have seen him." And so there are a couple of things that stood out for us. The first thing that stood out immediately is that "I am the way, the truth, and life" is our school motto. So we were like, whoa, yeah, meant to be. So via veritas et vita, that's our school motto. So we got a bit of a, you know, endorphin rush from hearing that, which was excellent. Awesome. The other thing was is that the priest spoke directly to our students, and he said, "Scholars have debated the meaning of 'in my Father's house there are many dwelling places,' and then Jesus saying, 'I prepare a place for you. I will come and take you there to myself, and then you'll see the Father.' So we can interpret it as heaven, right? So there are places for us in heaven, and Jesus will bring us to heaven, and we will see the Father. So that's good. You know, that's a valid interpretation, and that's usually the main one I've heard." Mm. And he said, "But scholars have been thinking, what if this interpretation was the church? So the dwelling places is our church, and Jesus, we encounter Jesus there. You know, the theology of the church is that the church is the body of Christ, or the bride of Christ. You know, the church is the bride. Jesus is the bride groom, and the church is the bridesmaid, and the image is that of marriage, so that the two become one, which is quite fascinating.
Very good.
And so, if you think about it, if you go to the church where we meet Christ, then we know the Father because we've encountered Christ through the church. If we've encountered Christ through the church, we've encountered God the Father. So I thought that was a really fascinating, mind-blowing thing to hear. And what he said was is that this is our mission, is to go out to the fringes of society and bring people to the church, bring people to Jesus, bring people to the Father. And he said, on the homeless, you know, he tied it into our homelessness retreat. He said the homeless are part of that mission too. So it's not that the church brings people in always, but it's that the church sends people out. You know, sends us out to bring these many rooms, you know, to them. So basically, in that sense, they experience the church, and they experience Jesus and experience the Father. So it's the church here on earth linking us to the church in heaven. So that was a mind-blowing experience, and I thought it was a great footnote.
Lovely.
Yeah. So we brought the students back to school on the last day of the retreat, and we did a prayer service with them in the chapel. And we have a deacon who works at our school as well as our chaplain. So he led them in prayer, and we used this gospel again and did some reflections on that, and gave them and blessed the students, and then sent them on their way. So that was our city experience.
Yeah, that sounds really lovely and spiritually fruitful, I think. I think the kids would have got a lot out of that.
Yeah, we hope they did. They seem like they're pretty receptive with the questions they were asking. And we do want to link our good works to our spirituality, to our Catholic faith as well. Sort of, I guess, in our context, without it, our good works could be for any reason. But when we link it to our faith, our good works are for God, and they have a divine and special purpose in that way.
Yeah, so true.
Yeah, so I've had a lot to say, Caroline, so I'm going to throw it to you. It's time for us to talk about science.
What a fine day for science.
You have any hobbies?
I collect spores, molds, and fungus.
Can you reverse the polarity?
I'll do my best.
So, Caroline, Obviously, the science topic is your forte. Jerry and I have had a go at this before, and we definitely
okay,
have
let
confirmed.
Me go for it, okay.
We've confirmed scientifically that you are the ones talk about this.
me take it back.
Yeah. So you've got two stories to tell us. What's the first one you
I
wanted
do.
To mention?
Okay. So just before we got on to the microphones, my Starwalk app aptly warned me that binary asteroid 1999 KW4, potentially hazardous asteroid, is now approaching Earth's vicinity. Dun, dun, dun. Anyway.
Yeah.
So, and that's because it's Saturday the 25th of May today. At the moment, as we're recording, this particular asteroid is actually passing Earth, and it's called a near-Earth asteroid because it's quite close, but quite close, I'm saying 3.2 million miles away. So I wouldn't be running, heading for the hills just yet. It's quite okay.
Not that heading for the hills would do anything
if
it hit the Earth, but yeah.
Not really. I mean, yeah, you probably want to, I don't know where you'd head. Where would you head? I don't know.
SpaceX headquarters.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. Like you'd want to be in a Star Trek episode and get into a shuttle or something. I don't know.
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah, that's right.
Go on.
So this asteroid is traveling at 48,000 miles per hour. So it's quite fast. And it was discovered about 20 years ago. So this is a known asteroid. It regularly orbits Earth, but at the moment it's quite close. But the cool thing about this one is that this asteroid is big enough to have its own moon. And and it's called it like a binary, like a little its own binary system, because it's an asteroid with a moon going, you know, circling it, orbiting it. And I mean, if you look at the photos, there are photos of it online, and it's just like irregularly shaped rock, basically, with another irregularly shaped smaller rock orbiting it.
That's amazing.
Isn't it cool? Yeah. I've never heard of it myself, but I mean, like an asteroid with a moon orbiting it. So I thought it was a pretty interesting thing to bring up today.
Yeah. And can I throw in, I read the article that you sent me, and apparently because this exists, it's actually its own binary star system.
That's it. It's not a star, but yeah.
Oh, sorry, not
it's
star little... system, but its own binary system.
It is.
Yeah.
That's right. It's its own binary system. So I guess it might be equivalent to, say, like the Earth hurtling through space and the moon and just, you know, orbiting the Earth, the sun. And but this one orbits around, and it's got its own little moon. So it's pretty cool. But there's not too much to say about it, except it's passing quite close by to Earth.
Fascinating, as another famous scientist would say.
Fascinating.
Yes.
That's right. But so I'll move on to the second topic.
Yes. So the second one was about the moon shrinking and earthquakes on the moon.
Yes.
What's going on?
Well, so if you've seen Despicable Me, Gru has finally got up there with his rocket and got his shrink ray and shrunk it. No.
That's
true.
Exactly
it's
what happened. Yeah, totally true.
It's just that me and the boys have been watching all the Despicable Me movies plus Minions over and over again. So
of course.
That popped into my head straight away. Not true. Don't be alarmed. The moon is not shrinking that fast. It's quite a slow shrink. So, at the beginning of its life, it's thought that the moon was molten. They think that actually it was formed from the Earth and another planet that hit the Earth, and they call it Theia. Coincidentally, I'd been hearing a podcast, a NASA podcast, about this as well, so it ties in really well.
Great.
And then so the Earth and the moon was left over. They think that the moon is made of part of Earth and this other planet, which is a side note, but interesting fact. At the beginning of our solar system, the moon was created and it's thought to be quite molten. And all this time, 4.65 or 6 billion years, it's still cooling down. So what's happening is that when it cools down, it slightly contracts and shrinks down. So That, along with the gravitational effect of the Earth. So, you know, we all know the moon orbits the Earth and they have a gravitational effect on each other. So the moon will create the waves on the Earth, and the Earth is strong. So it kind of pulls the Earth, the moon. So when, and they think that when the moon is in apogee, which is the furthest away in its orbit from the Earth, it has the strongest effect, and it kind of causes the shrinking, or at least some of these moonquakes, they're called,
right,
to occur. So it causes seismic activity on the moon. So what happens? So how do we know this? So basically, there have been several moon landings. As we know, the Apollo missions between 1969 and 1977, on four of those missions, seismometers were actually placed on the moon so that we could measure if there was any seismic activity.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So that was pretty interesting.
Good move.
Yeah.
Good move.
Yeah. So we all know about the Neil Armstrong. You know, he was on the moon in 1969. That was the first moon landing, but there were several after that, and several people have actually been on the moon, which is pretty cool. And so several of those seismometers collected data for quite a long time, some for a few weeks, but some even up to 9 years. So we have a vast amount of data that has been recently started to be analyzed by NASA. And these, you know, measuring these moonquakes. That, along with there's a current mission, NASA mission called the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, which is it orbits around. So a little probe was what I'm trying to say, that orbits the moon. And its mission is to photograph the surface of the moon. And it's taken some really good high-resolution pictures of the surface. And these pictures are showing activity, quite recent activity, fresh activity. I mean, we're talking millions of years still, but that's in terms of space-time, it's not very much. And so these pictures are showing faults, or they're called scarps, and there are cliffs. And there are boulders at the end of the cliffs, at the edges of these cliffs. And what's happening there is, so as the surface of the moon ages, it tends to darken. But in these regions, are you still there?
Yep.
Okay, sorry. I heard a thing on Skype. So the regions that have not darkened, they're quite light and they're quite young. So they're termed quite young. And so with the seismic data and these images, they're able to study the seismic activity of the moon. And from that, they're deducing that the moon is shrinking, which is really interesting. So, I mean, this kind of raises some more issues, but more questions. So, like, of course, with all the missions NASA do that I've been listening to and I've been following, whenever they discover something, it kind of brings up more questions. So one question is, well, why is the interior of the moon, if the moon's still shrinking, it's assumed that maybe the interior of the moon is still quite hot. So why is it still quite hot? Isn't it cooled down by now? Like, it's still... It's a lot smaller than the Earth.
Isn't that because a giant life form is gestating in there? I mean, Doctor Who kind of confirmed that.
You want to call NASA and just remind them?
Yeah, that's why we're sending astronauts there in less than 5 years to make sure, see how it's going.
Exactly, that's right. And I was going to get to that.
Sorry, I stole your thunder. Go on.
That's okay. You can steal it. I'll still get there. So that raises that question. I mean, because the moon doesn't have a molten core, like an iron-rich core like the Earth does. It's thought to be just a rock, basically a big round rock. So the fact that it could be quite warm in the center, you know, raises questions. It could be the it could just be the effect of the gravitational pull of the Earth. But you know,
that gives me a Simpsons reference, Caroline.
There we go.
The MacGyver one, yes. Was it? Yeah. I think there was.
Don't thank me. Thank Patty the Earth's Selma. Gravitational pull.
Yeah, don't thank me. Thank the Moon's gravitational pull. Yes.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. Well, we could Simpsons all day. Seriously.
We could. Sorry. Continue.
Yeah. Inside jokes. Anyway. Yes. Yeah, so. Yeah. So these are all questions that NASA are investigating and. They've just kind of come out with this information. So it's ongoing study. It's always an ongoing study and, you know, it'd be interesting to learn some more about this. But now we know that the moon does have moonquakes and that it is shrinking. It's not shrinking by a lot. It's a very small amount. So it's not going to disappear, like, you know, aka shrink ray, but it's there and it's kind of getting a little bit smaller. So, yeah, as you mentioned, in 2024, NASA is sending a mission. So it would be interesting to see if they do actually put any more seismometers on the moon while they're there. And, you know, perhaps even, like, dig the surface a bit and take the temperature and see if it's a bit warmer the further down you go and all of that kind of thing like they're doing for the Mars missions at the moment.
Yeah, my hot tip is this for NASA. Don't worry about seismometers. Just take an ultrasound machine. That's all you really, you know, and check and see how a little space creature in there is going.
Okay.
Well, come on, Doctor Who has already told us that. We know the answer.
Okay. Do you reckon an ultrasound will work on the moon?
I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I have no idea.
You need quite a big one. Anyway.
Yeah, just watch out for the moon spiders. They're a bit dangerous.
And yeah, okay, thank you.
Sorry. And, you know,
and with that, we'll end the segment.
Well, before we do, this goes back to our first segment as well, Caroline, because we were talking about creation being the glory of God. And even, you know, even in space, all of this just generates awe and wonder in all of us, doesn't it? And again, you know, if we can't work out the universe yet because it's so massive, let alone the moon, we're still trying to work out what's going on there. And that's the closest object to Earth. This is all this awe and wonder. And I think, again, it points to the glory of God, doesn't it?
It really does.
Mm, and we've talked about this with black holes in a previous episode and some other things too. All right. Yeah. So thank you for that. That was really wonderful. I love listening to you talk about science. So let's move on to our last topic.
And that's recorded. So, I can play that back forever.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. So let's move to our last topic. We'll stay in space. We're going to talk very quickly about entertainment.
Not what we came here to do.
No, but it's what I'm going to do.
I have a plan.
You've got a plan.
I have part of a plan.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
So, Caroline, this is a super short segment today. I don't know how excited you are, but I got super excited because very, very recently, we knew it was coming, but we were given our first tease of a brand new Star Trek series called Star Trek Picard. So have you seen the teaser yet?
Yeah. You know, I have to admit this, I'm actually more excited than you think I am.
Oh, yes.
All these years of conditioning me to like Star Trek, I've finally got in there. Like I, growing up, we used to watch a lot of Star Trek and not all of it was, you know, voluntary on my part. I've seen so much of it and now I actually really enjoy it.
All those years of you rolling your eyes at me in our youth, Caroline, when I talked about how good Star Trek is, and now finally, actually, I think the tipping point for you was Star Trek First Contact, which was that the movie where the Borg go into the past. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, that was pretty good.
I get the feeling that was where that you kind of like, oh, yeah, that's not too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think some of the older episodes, I guess, were a little slow for me. Like, you know, they were a little slow. I guess I used to like Deanna Troi because she used to enjoy chocolate quite a lot. That appealed to me. I mean, there were quite a few. And I always liked Picard. I thought he was fantastic. You know, I thought he was a really strong character. Data and all those. Very good, strong characters. But sometimes it was a little slow.
Yeah, clearly, I mean, you know, season one wasn't the best advertisement for Star Trek The Next Generation, but it thankfully it got better after that. Because I remember I was watching it as a child in primary school and thinking, how awkward is this? I was trying to like it. Yeah.
Some of it was.
So, just quickly, with the teaser, have you seen the final episode of The Next Generation called All Good Things by any chance?
I have a feeling I may not have.
Do you recall?
There's a connection I haven't,
got
there, so I might have to watch that.
So watch it, because what happens is Captain Picard lives in three time periods of his life at once, his past, his present, and his future. And the future self is him tending to vines in a vineyard, which I love in this teaser because that's exactly what he's doing. He's there in a vineyard. It evokes the image of All Good Things of that episode. And the wine labels, you know, you see those bottles of wine because in his family, making wine is what they do. So Chateau Picard is a throwback to that. It's a throwback to an episode called Family, where Picard goes back to his, you know, to see his brother and sister-in-law after he's been turned into a Borg and then, you know, rehumanized again after that.
Rings a bell. I may have seen,
And there's references where he pulls out a bottle of wine from Chateau Picard that he's got on the Enterprise. You know, he saves it for special occasions. So that was wonderful. There's a link to probably one of the least liked Star Trek The Next Generation movies. It was the last one called. And now that I'm trying to think about it, I can't remember the name, but it was this one where Picard, where there's this Romulan called Shinzon, who is a clone of Picard and whatever else. But there's that story. And then in the new, and so he goes to Romulus. So he's got a connection with the Romulan Empire from there. Mm-hmm. And then when Star Trek 2009 came out, which was kind of this reboot of Captain Kirk's story, that story begins because Romulus in the Next Generation era explodes. You know, there's an exploding star, apparently. You know, I'll let Jimmy Akin try and science that one out, but an exploding star, you know, destroys Romulus. And it seems like Captain Picard, going by this teaser, you know, led a giant armada to go and rescue as many as he could, and then there was some kind of disaster. And it also seems like he's been promoted to Admiral, so I got really excited. It looks really good.
Yes, Admiral. I noticed they said Admiral, so that's pretty cool. Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure that Secrets of Star Trek, I'm sure Dom and Jimmy and Father Corey will have more to say about it. So I'm looking forward to hearing what their reaction is. So why don't we wrap it up there? And actually, I'd like to wrap it up today by thanking some of our patrons. So I love doing this. So today, I'd like to thank Kathleen H., Jerry G., Kevin K., Joshua G., and John S. Through their generous donations, they support SQPN and help us to keep this network going and all of our wonderful shows. So if you would like to continue listening to more Catholics of Oz, remember that you can subscribe on your favorite podcasting apps. And also, we'd love to hear what you think about the topics that we've been talking about today. So you can leave us feedback on Facebook at SQPN's Facebook page, which is facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. We also have our own Facebook page, which we'd love you to become part of. And we are at facebook.com/CatholicsOfOz, Oz, spelt O-Z. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can email us at CatholicsOfOz@SQPN.com. So leave comments for us and tell us what you think. Don't forget all the other great shows on SQPN as well, including The Secrets of Star Trek, The Secrets of Technology, Secrets of Movies and TV, which we, Caroline, did an episode of recently on the Lego movie with Jerry, which is awesome. Yep. Secrets of Star Trek and Doctor Who, Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World, and so much more. So don't forget to subscribe and listen to those wonderful shows as well. So, Caroline, thank you very much for joining me today on episode 10 of Catholics of Oz.
Thank you. That was so much fun.
And once again, I'm Lindsay Sands, and thank you all for listening to The Catholics of Oz.